Okay, tonight I want to pick up where we left off in 1 Chronicles. We left off in this chapter 3, and of course we're going through this very, very difficult portion of Scripture where virtually nobody wades through because you're dealing with all of these different genealogies, and so-and-so begot so-and-so, and so-and-so begot so-and-so. And like I said, these people can't have names like Tom, Dick, or Harry, or George, or Mike, or Bob. No, they got to have names like Malash, Shalahaz, Bash, Hezekiah, you know, it's like, man, can't even pronounce their names. But, okay, now we're going to be dealing with David's sons and his descendants. And, of course, the reason, of course, that God emphasizes his line so much is because this is the line where Jesus Christ is going to come through. And that's why these genealogies are so important. But understand this, too. In the Chronicles, and like I said earlier, I really believe it's Ezra who compiled all of these different genealogies in the first and second book of Chronicles. And he obviously had access to a number of genealogies, and I think some of these genealogies we can just assume that they may have been fragmented, but he still pieced them together. So anyway, beginning with this verse 1 of chapter 3 of 1 Chronicles, it says, "Now these were the sons of David born to him in Hebron. The firstborn was Amnon by Ahinoam, the Jezreelitess. The second was Daniel by Abigail, the Carmelitess. The third was Absalom, the son of Maacah, the daughter of Talmiah, king of Geshur. The fourth was Adonijah, the son of Haggith. The fifth was Shephatiah by Abital. The sixth was Ithream by his wife Elga. Six were born to him in Hebron, and there he reigned 7 years and 6 months, and in Jerusalem he reigned 33 years. Now, before we go any further, it's kind of breaking down the descendants that David had in regards to the ones that he had in Hebron, but I think some of these names are kind of significant because Amnon, that was his firstborn, but it ended up where after David had sinned with Bathsheba, God had told him very specifically that because he had done such a thing and because he had Uriah killed, and by the way, when Uriah was killed, there was also a number of other men that were killed in that suicide mission that David had him set on so that he could, you know, basically take his wife. So what he did was really, really displeasing God's sight, and God said that the sword would never depart from his house. Well, then it wasn't that long after that David had a daughter named Tamar, and Amnon was her half-brother. And Amnon really, really, you know, desired his sister Tamar. I mean, he really wanted this woman, and he ended up raping her. And then her full brother, Absalom, kind of bided his time, and then 2 years later, Absalom just ran him through with a spear. And Absalom, you know, he was the second born, but then Absalom led this whole revolt against his father David because of the judgment that was against David and his household because of his sin against Uriah. Okay, long story short, after Absalom dies, he's got this other son here by the name of Dan. Oh, I'm sorry, back up to this, that latter part of that verse 1. I was saying Absalom was the second born, but it wasn't. It was a guy by the name of Daniel, by Abigail the Carmelitess. Now, here's what's interesting about this Daniel, is that when you start reading in Kings and you read in Samuel about the succession to the throne, Daniel's never mentioned. In other words, after Amnon died, it should have been Daniel that was next in line for the throne. But it's Absalom who comes to the forefront and saying he's the next in line for the throne. So just put two and two together. Whatever happened to this Daniel?
He must have died prematurely.
Yes, I believe that he died when he was young, just a child, because there's no mention of him in terms of him being in line for the succession of the throne. And so Amnon dies, and apparently Daniel dies when he's young, and that's all we hear about him. And then Absalom dies because of his revolt when Joab had killed him. You go through this family tree here of David's, and you can see it, just a lot of dysfunction. And it was something that David had brought upon himself, and not only because of his sin with Bathsheba, and not only because he had Uriah, her husband, killed. We are told when we read about these episodes that David very often never crossed his sons. In other words, he never disciplined them. Absalom and Amnon, we are told that he didn't deal with them. Now, to me, David was a great man and a great king and a great warrior, and there are so many things about David that are just absolutely, you know, fantastic in terms of his administrative skills, his faith, and his trust in God. But man, as a father, he seems to have really dropped the ball with a number of his sons. The exception, of course, would have been Solomon, which he appears to have really have taken the time and made the effort. And exerted the energy to raise him up in the love and knowledge and fear of God. But apparently he never corrected these other sons, and that grew out to really be a thorn in his side. Now, I want to pick up where we left off in this verse 5 now, in Chronicles chapter 3, 1 Chronicles chapter 3. It says, these were born to him in Jerusalem: Shemaiah, Shobab, Nathan, and Solomon, four by Bathsheba or Bathsheba. It says here, Bathsheba. Yeah, that's Bathsheba, the daughter of Amiel. Now, I get this impression that Bathsheba actually bore him other sons. In other words, Nathan, Solomon, Shemaiah, and Shobab. But can anybody tell me what's the real significance about Nathan and Solomon? Just keep this in mind. It's through Solomon that the throne that goes through all the way down to Joseph. But interesting thing, it's through his son Nathan that if you follow his genealogy, it goes all the way down to Mary. And Mary and Joseph, when they marry each other, they both have royal blood coursing through their veins. They are both descendants of David. And Jesus gets his legal title to the throne through Solomon's line. But then he gets his humanity through his mother's line. That goes all the way back to Nathan. Then he says this here in that verse 6. He says, "And Ibhar and Elishima and Eliphiet, Nogal, Nepheg and Japhia, Elishima, Elidia and Elphiliet, nine. All these were the sons of David besides the sons of the concubines, and Tamar was their sister." So David, you know, if you add up all his sons, he had over 13 sons, but they don't even include some of his sons with some of his other concubines. So it's conceivable that he could have had as many as 30 sons. And then in verse 10 it says, "Now Solomon's son was Rehoboam, Abijah was his son, and Asa his son, Jehoshaphat his son." Now, just keep this in mind, that Rehoboam is the king, Solomon's son, through whom the line of Christ is going to come through as far as the throne is concerned, as far as Joseph is concerned. And then verse 11 says, "Joram his son, Ahaziah his son, Joash his son, Amaziah his son, Azariah his son, Jotham his son, Ahaz his son, Hezekiah his son, and Manasseh his son." So if you just follow this line here, down here, it goes from Hezekiah to Manasseh. You follow this down as far as the line of Christ, and it goes from Ammon, his son, and Josiah, his son. The sons of Josiah were Johaniah, the firstborn, and the second was Jehoiakim, and the third was Zedekiah, and the fourth was Shalom. The sons of Jehoiakim were Jeconiah, his son, Zedekiah, his son. The sons of Jeconiah, the prisoner, were Shethiel, his son, and Melchiram, and Pedia. Now, before we go any further here, it says the sons of Jeconiah, the prisoner, were Shethiel, his son. Now, this is the line that Christ is going to come through, but I think it's very, very interesting what Jeremiah said about this particular man, because in Jeremiah chapter 22, it says, "As I live, declares the Lord, even though Jeconiah," now that he has different pronunciations for his name and different spellings for his name. Jeconiah is the same as Konia, and this is what it says here. "As I live, declares the Lord, even though Konia, the son of Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, were a signet ring on my right hand, yet I would pull you off, and I will give you over into the hands of those who are seeking your life. Yes, into the hand of those whom you dread, even into the hands of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and into the hands of the Chaldeans. I will hurl you and your mother who bore you into another country where you were not born, and there you will die. But as for the land to which they desire to return, they will not return to it. Is this man Konia a despised, shattered jar, or is he an undesirable vessel? Why have he and his descendants been hurled out and cast into a land that they do not know? O land, 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 hear the word of the Lord. Thus says the Lord, write this man down childless, a man who will not prosper in his days, for no man of his descendants will prosper sitting on the throne of David or ruling again in Judah. Now, the reason I read that is because when we read this over here about this Coniah, he says the prisoner, well, this is what happened to him. He ended up being hauled off into Babylon, and he only reigned like 3 months. But he had a number of descendants, but what's interesting is this. This is what God said about this man. He says, thus saith the Lord, write this man down childless. Well, Coniah, or Jeconiah, was not childless because we're reading about his descendants. But if you read further on where Jeremiah says this, or God says to Jeremiah, a man who will not prosper in his days, for no man of his descendants will prosper. So see, even though God says, they write this man childless, he says he has descendants. But then it's explained when you read further and it says this, for no man of his descendants will prosper sitting on the throne of David or ruling again in Judah.
That's in Jeremiah. So.
That's in Jeremiah chapter 23. Now, we're dealing with Jeconiah here. This is the one through his descendants, Jesus Christ is coming. But none of his descendants got on the throne. As a matter of fact, the last one to rule was Zedekiah. And what happened to Zedekiah? It ended up with Zedekiah would not listen to Jeremiah. He would not listen to the writings of Ezekiel. They were warning him about his need to surrender to Nebuchadnezzar, and Zedekiah would not listen to these prophets. And long story short, Zedekiah and Jeremiah were saying to him, look, you're going to go to Babylon. And then Ezekiel was saying, if I'm not mistaken, it was Ezekiel saying, you're not going to see Babylon. And Jeremiah was saying, you're going to Babylon. And Zedekiah figured, well, these guys are just buffoons. They're just contradicting each other. But that was fulfilled to a T, because when Nebuchadnezzar finally breached the walls of this Jerusalem, they took Zedekiah and his sons and they brought him before Nebuchadnezzar, and they killed Zedekiah's sons right in front of his eyes. And then Nebuchadnezzar had Zedekiah's eyes gouged out, and he was dragged off to Babylon, and there he died. So the both prophets were dead on that he went to Babylon. He never saw Babylon. But it wasn't through Zedekiah's descendants that Jesus Christ came. It was through Coniah, all right, or Jeconiah. You know, and all I'm saying is this, that was their last king, Zedekiah. But even though the line went down through Jeconiah, it's like they never had a king since, right? When Jesus Christ was on the scene, you know, centuries later, they did not have a king. They were ruled by Rome, and they won't have a king until Jesus Christ comes back and rules and reigns, right? So I think it's pretty right on here, even though, you know, this is may seem like a lot of useless information when we're trying to read this. But let's pick up with that verse 17 again. Because it says this, the sons of Jeconiah, the prisoner, were Shethiel, his son, and Malchiram, Pideah, Shinazar, and Jekamiah, and Hoshema, and Nedabiah. The sons of Pideah were Zerubbabel, or Zerubbabel, and Shemai, and the sons of Zerubbabel were Meshua, and Hananiah, and Shelomith was their sister. And now Zerubbabel, that's the line that Jesus Christ is going to come through. And then it goes on to say in verse 20 of 1 Chronicles chapter 3, it says, and Hashubah, Ohiel, Berechiah, Hasadiah, and Jeshabhesed, 5. The sons of Hananiah were Pelethia and Jeshua, and the sons of Rephia, the sons of Arnan, the sons of Obadiah, the sons of Shekaniah. The descendants of, or the sons of Shekaniah, were Shemaiah, and the sons of Shemaiah, Hattush, Igal, Bariah, and Neariah, and Japhat. 6. The sons of Neariah were Elonai and Hishkiah and Azrikim. 3. The sons of Elionai were Hodeviah and Elishib, Peleiah and Akub, and Johanan, Deliah, and NNI 7. Now, I'm just glad I got through that. I feel like I just went through a shredder trying to name these guys' names. You know, like I said, I like to go to their parents and slap them and say, why did you name your kid that? Anyway, like I said, I'm not going to skip it, but you know, you put together these genealogies, and God really puts a premium on these genealogies because of the fact that He wants us to understand that Jesus Christ is coming through a particular line. And God just really puts an emphasis upon this because you look at the line of Jesus Christ, and it truly is amazing to me. You look at His family tree, what has He got there? He's got all kinds of riffraff. I mean, He's got people that are involved in incest. He's got people involved in polygamy. He's got people that were murderers, that were liars, that were thieves. He's got people that were into idolatry. And you just go down the line. And if you could find all this kind of dysfunction in His family tree, what is that basically telling us?
That He didn't set Himself above reach.
Right. I mean, He has come into a fallen world, you know, with fallen human beings, and He has identified with man in all of his failures, in all of his weaknesses and shortcomings. And we are told very clearly that He was a man like us in all things but sin. And, you know, it's almost as though what God is saying here is, hey, it doesn't matter what your past is, or it doesn't matter what you've done, what crimes you've committed, or whatever, Jesus Christ came to save sinners. And that's what you could find in His family tree. I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to find worse sinners than in Jesus Christ's family tree, right? Right? Now, did anybody have anyone to add or share to that